Comedy Gang, I'm about to play a show that starts off a little bit different. Bear with it. It lasts for about 15 minutes outside the studio, and then we come back in. Here it goes.
Hey, gang. Welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio, Riding a Bike Edition. Yes, today I am riding a bicycle. Why? Well, you may well ask why. It is because my car insurance is lapsed. I forgot about that. And until I get the car insurance reinstated, it's the bicycle for me. There you go. Riding a bicycle edition. Well, we've got, and you may well ask, well, why do you need to record a show while you're on the road? Well, I need to record a show while I'm riding a bicycle on the road because bicycles go a lot slower, and I'm not going to get to my studio in time to do the show unless I record it now. So here we go. So the first topic for today is the CoCertified app. You know, it's got great new features. It has the Tucker table. Tells you who's been boycotting Tucker Carlson as which advertisers. And the thing is, this is not just about kosher food. Okay, it's about a whole kosher, a non-kosher certified lifestyle. We want a non-kosher certified lifestyle. So it goes beyond the food. It goes to our whole society. You know, I would like non-kosher certified genitalia, if you know what I mean. I think there's a lot of progress that we need to make, and CoCertified is a great start. I'll be talking more about this in coming days, you can be sure of that. Okay, the next topic, of course, and if you want the CoCertified app, then you're going to go to nationalbugle.com and you download it. You'll see the link right there. Okay, next we have... Well, I was looking at the papers today, and I thought, you know, they keep talking about this Mayor Pete Buttigieg, and they're trying to meme him into a front runner. And if you go to Real Clear Politics and you look at the average of the polls, he's way up there. They're kind of memeing him into a front runner. Nobody knows anything about him. Except he's, like, gay. And he's, you know, well, anyway. So, I looked at I went to his website. And I wanted to see what was on there. What are his actual positions? Because they're not talking about his positions. It's just that, you know, wouldn't it be nice to have a gay president? And I guess, well, you know, maybe it would be, maybe it wouldn't, who knows. But I wanted to see what his positions were on the issues. So I went, and there was divided up into a few things. One was security. Okay, security. Let's see what is about security. Click on that, and it gives you a few choices. So one was foreign policy. And I click on that, and there's just maybe one little paragraph that says we shouldn't be fighting endless wars. Well, okay. Yeah, I guess you could say that. We shouldn't be fighting endless wars. Nothing particularly specific, just that one bullet point, we shouldn't be fighting endless wars. All right, so then I look at immigration, okay? I'm pretty sure that was under the security section. And under immigration, it said we need, it was security, right? Security. How do you have security with immigration? Well, we have to secure, and not our borders. It's not that we have to secure our borders. We need an immigration policy that will secure our values. All right? This is where it started getting interesting. Okay? So the immigration policy doesn't secure our borders. It secures our values. So what are our values? Well, not breaking up families. That's our values. Having taking care of the DACA toddlers, right? You got to be nice. We haven't been hearing much about the DACA babies, but yeah, the DACA kids. Got to take care of the DACA kids. We need a pathway to citizenship for all those people who are contributing to, what was it? It wasn't contributing to the economy, because I guess even he realizes that's a stretch. Maybe it was just contributing to our society or contributing to our culture. We need a pathway to citizenship because of our values, right? And I got to thinking about that because I've been hearing a lot about our values, to secure our values. I've been hearing a lot about our values from the Democrats, and I'm pretty sure, I mean, I know I've heard Kamala Harris talk about this thing. I think Elizabeth Warren, she talks about the values that define us as a nation, right? The values define us as a nation. And you wonder, okay, what's she thinking of? Nation, of course, comes from a Latin root word, you know, to say, I don't know how you say it in Latin, but it's the same root word that is in nativity. It's in native. Natal, right? Like as in prenatal, natal to birth. It's all about birth. A nation, you're born into a nation. Which makes, when you think about it, this whole meme that we've been hearing for the past few decades that we're a nation of immigrants, that it's an oxymoron, literally. And when I say literally, I literally mean literally. It's literally, literally an oxymoron, because you're born into a nation. That's the whole etymology of the word, nation. But no, so we're a nation of immigrants. But according to Elizabeth Warren and many others, no, we're not defined by how we're born. Our nation is not defined by our birth. It's not defined by our genes or our inheritance or our heritage, so to speak. It's not defined by our language. It's not defined by religion. It's not even defined by culture. It's defined by our values. Our values. The values that define us as a nation, as a people. Well, what are these values, right? Well, you know, if Mayor Pete Buttigieg is an example of our values, okay, so it's our values, I guess, are like, you know, dude-on-dude gay sex, right? That's our values. Our values is postnatal abortion, right? Infanticide, that's our values. That's our values now. Our values is chopping off your genitalia and pretending you're a woman. That's our values. That's what defines us as a nation, okay? So you know, I'm looking at Pete Buttigieg's his other positions on the issues, and among those positions, okay, guns, gun violence. What was the term he used? The Second Amendment. I don't know. What certainly wasn't Second Amendment, but he's young. He is 38 years old. He grew up in a country of mass shootings, right? So we need sensible gun laws. You know, I'm not really that much of a gun enthusiast. I know how to shoot. A little. but here's the thing. It really is, like, I utilize my First Amendment rights a lot more than my Second Amendment rights. But if I'm not willing to use my First Amendment rights to speak up and defend other people's Second Amendment rights, there may come a time where I'm going to want some people maybe to use their Second Amendment rights to protect my First Amendment rights. Does that sound crazy? Maybe it is crazy. But it sounds good. It sounds a little crazy, but it sounds good. It's kind of catchy, right? Okay, so our values. Pete Buttigieg's values. Well, here's the dude. He's gay married. But it's not just that he's gay married. But he's gay married to a dude, right? I mean, gay marriage, like if it was, you know, if like some homosexual guy was gay married to a lesbian, you know, maybe that would be okay. But the whole idea of, you know, these homosexual guys gay marrying each other, I don't know. Okay, it's getting a little bit noisy here, so I'm gonna hit the pause button.
Okay, well, I am back in the studio. I appreciate you bearing with me for that period of time, but Wednesday is a very, very tight day here at the Co-Certified Studios in beautiful downtown Burbank. And, you know, if you don't have car insurance, if it lapses and you got to take a bike, you got to take a bike. And I can't be late for the show, so the show must goes on, even if it's on a bike. All right, but we are back, and Mr. T is at the control desk, and so everything is just fine. I've got Pete Buttigieg's foreign policy right in front of me. This is the whole policy. We need to fundamentally rethink our foreign policy to help America lead and shape a better world for the future. The next president will have to restore American credibility on the world stage and establish a new and higher standard for the deployment of U.S. military force, because we've got to deploy these forces. I mean, you got the forces, and they got to be deployed, right? It's time to put an end to endless war and focus on how best to use America's strengths to address future threats, including climate security. Climate security. Well, why don't we use the military to, bomb tornadoes or something? Climate security is a key basis for diplomacy. Pete is committed to reinventing institutions of international engagement. What's that, like NATO or what? To address 21st century challenges and opportunities and to reversing the rise of authoritarianism abroad. Oh, okay. Actually, that sounds a little bit ominous. There's a rise of authoritarianism abroad. Who is the authoritarian they're talking about? It's our fearless leader, Vladimir Putin. He wants to reverse the rise of Vladimir Putin, the fearless leader, while revitalizing democratic capitalism and our democracy at home. Okay. Now, scrolling down here a little bit, there's a couple of more things. There's immigration, which I talked about. There's gun laws, which I talked about. The next one, and this is under security, election security. Election security. So remember, Vladimir Putin, he wasn't mentioned specifically, but I think that's who he's talking about. I'm pretty sure that's who he's talking about. Our democracy is sacred, but in the 21st century, it is facing unprecedented threats. We need to defend our elections with better cybersecurity. Because the Russians hacked our voting machines, right? Everybody knows that. James Clapper said it. 17 intelligence agencies said it. And you know who some of those intelligence agencies are? The Coast Guard, the DEA. You think they would know if Russia hacked our election machines? Okay. Let's just go down. We need to make it clear to foreign governments that if they attempt to interfere in our elections, there will be serious consequences. Security. Okay, yeah. Just going back up to this immigration. My goodness. Pass comprehensive immigration reform, right? Because, yes. Hold on just one second here. So here's the exact quote. We must reclaim our nation's standing as a human rights leader by implementing common sense immigration reform that will secure our values, right? Not to secure the borders, secure the values. The greatest nation in the world should have nothing to fear from children fleeing violence. More importantly, children fleeing violence should have nothing
nothing to fear from the greatest nation in the world. We must remember that immigrants are an essential part of our American story. Immigration creates strong families, strong subsidized families. Yes, maybe they're strong families. They're being subsidized. And the non-immigrants who are paying the taxes don't feel like they have the money to have their own families. But the immigrants don't care whether or not they have the money because they get subsidized. Okay, strong families, blah, blah, blah. Vibrant democracy, blah, blah, blah. Dreamers. End the backlogs in our lawful immigration and asylum procedures. Reasonable security measures at the border. Okay. Modernize our immigration laws to reflect today's humanitarian and economic needs. Restore our global leadership in humanitarian relief. We need to lead in humanitarian relief for refugees. End the family separation crisis. That's the crisis. It's not an immigration crisis. It's a family separation crisis. And evaluate ICE and CBP practices to ensure similar humanitarian crises never happen again. Okay. Now, let's election security. So we've done this security pretty well. Okay, under security also has minimum wage, affordable housing, criminal justice reform. Security means a fair and racially equitable criminal justice system. Okay, extremism, blah, blah, blah. Okay, let's get down to... Yeah, and then he wants to replace the Electoral College with a popular vote so that the states... So any states that feel like allowing their dead people to vote can sway the election then, right? They're dead. They're immigrants, of course. I say dead people in jest, really, although, yeah, in 1960, the dead vote in Chicago swung the election to Kennedy over Nixon, perhaps, maybe. Okay, and now what is the first gay president? What is his position on LGBTQRS rights? Freedom means living free of discrimination because of who you are and whom you love. So pass the Equality Act, reverse the ban on transgender military service, enforce non-discrimination provisions of the Affordable Care Act, and other things. Pete knows that our families, communities, and nations are stronger when we allow all individuals to be true to who they are. A person's sexual orientation and gender identity should not limit them from pursuing their dreams. And what if their dreams are like seducing your 5-year-old son or 7-year-old? I don't know. I'm just saying. Okay, here's the thing, though. One of his bullet points, improve the health and well-being of LGBTQ youth, parents, and families. Well, here's one way you could improve their health, okay? You could stop letting them have man-on-man gay sex because it's pretty unhealthy, right? Oh, here's another thing. How about not letting them dismember their genitalia? Mutilate that. I think that would be healthy, right? Now, this is not really a big issue for me. I'm only talking about it because it's Pete Buttigieg, and the media is pushing him. They've memed him. They've pushed him into way past Beto O'Rourke. He's got double Beto O'Rourke. In some polls, he's ahead of Camilla, and so he's. In some polls, he's, I guess, third place right behind Biden and Sanders. So the more you know, it's good to know about these things. Okay, when we come back, we're going to have more exciting things to talk about, so stay tuned. Thank you.
welcome back to the show. Okay, next topic. Martin Luther King gets Me Too'd. This could be fun. This could be a little bit interesting. You know, Kirsten Gillibrand, who rumor has it is running for president, she's made a big name for herself as perhaps the leader of the Me Too movement. She is perhaps the most prominent Me Too leader because, well, she secured its biggest, well, politically at least, its biggest victim. Victim or whatever. I mean, I'm not trying to call him a victim, but biggest catch. The biggest catch politically. I mean, I guess Harvey Weinstein is like he's a millionaire or multi-billionaire or whatever. But Al Franken, a senator, was Me Too'd out of office. A Jewish senator was Me Too'd out of office by Kirsten Gillibrand for taking kind of funny photos. Well, I don't know if they're funny, but they're trying to be funny. He wasn't actually groping this woman. He just was pretending to grope and while she was asleep and trying to be funny. He's a comedian, right? Before he was Me Too'd, he used to tell a story about, who was the senator from Oklahoma who was a doctor? I can't remember his name, but Al Franken told a story about trying to make friends with this senator. What's the guy's name? I can't remember. And so because he's trying to reach out, make friends. They go to lunch together. At first, he asked them out for dinner, and I don't want to have dinner with you. Okay, well, how about lunch? Okay, we'll have lunch. So they have lunch. So he said, tell me, Senator, what do you do for a living? Well, I'm a doctor. Oh, you're a doctor. Oh, hey, in Oklahoma, do doctors have to go to college to become doctors? And then the guy got all incensed. And then Al Franken says, well, hey, I'm a comedian, and we try to make jokes for a living. And then the guy realized, what was the senator's name? I want to say Vitter, but probably not. He's one of the guys from Oklahoma. And the senator realized, okay, humor, make jokes. So that's what Al Franken did for a living. He wrote jokes. And sometimes some of them were funny. And Stuart Smalley was a funny character. Now, some of the Me Too suggestions were like when he was kissing somebody for a skit that he slipped his tongue in. And yeah, that's gross. I certainly wouldn't want that to happen. But at any rate, so Kirsten Gillibrand got Al Franken kicked out of the Senate for hamming it up in a photograph and then maybe sticking his tongue in some girl's mouth during, I shouldn't say some girl's mouth, but in an actress's mouth during a kiss scene, okay? Well, Martin Luther King, you know, it's not just that he's being accused of all these things. It's not like some accusation just happened. This has been talked about for years and years, and it's not just the FBI. It's because J. Edgar Hoover's not the most reliable source. But it's not just the FBI. It's his friend Ralph Abernathy having written a book and making all of the same claims about, you know, rape and beating prostitutes and all of this stuff. Now what's going to happen? And Kirsten Gillibrand... Well, you know, the thing is, a lot of what's going on takes on a life of its own. And obviously, well, the Me Too stuff is something that took on a life of its own, and really, it really wasn't something that came from the Jewish power structure. The Jewish power structure has been pushing feminism. It has been pushing the idea of female victimization by toxic masculinity and all of this. The Me Too stuff, it it became a big thing, and just like on Saturday Night Live also, Larry David, the Jewish writer of the Seinfeld TV show, he said, you know, a lot of these people, a lot of them are Jewish. They're Jewish. He said that. And Harvey Weinstein and Al Franken. And so it wasn't anything that they ever could control. So obviously, Martin Luther King is the patron saint of the New American Republic. He's really the founding father of the New American Republic. I mean, you can take down statues to Jefferson or Jackson or, you know, Lincoln's coming, Washington, sure, you can take down their statues. But to take down the statue of our founding father, Martin Luther King, I mean, this would be such a schism in the emerging anti-white male power structure. It's going to be fun to watch. Let's see what happens with that. Okay, we will be right back. Hey gang, Patrick Slattery here with an important message that is pertinent to anyone who shops for groceries, eats food, or just has an inquisitive mind like myself. What I'm about to introduce you to is a segment of our food culture that has been kept so low profile to the American public that virtually no one is aware of how dominant it is on our refrigerator and cupboard shelves. What I'm talking about is the kosher certification industry and a new app, Kosher-tified, that delivers a comprehensive education on all aspects regarding this little-known practice. After reviewing this app, I found that it is useful for practically anyone who purchases food, regardless of their religious faith or identity. Its database of products not kosher certified is a win-win convenience for all food-conscious people. So why not check out thekosherquestion.com or click on the link at nationalbugle.com and see how modifying your grocery shopping with the Kosher-tified app can make a huge difference for your future. Welcome back to the show. National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network. So, let's just finish up talking about Martin Luther King. Yeah, these are things that have been talked about for a long time. And the thing is, it's not just accusations, it's not just talking about, but that the FBI amassed a whole bunch of data. We're talking about, you know, tape recordings. Now, here's one thing. Now, the tape recordings, they've been sealed, and they've been sealed, but they are due to be released in another, 8-9 years. They're due to be released, unsealed. It could happen earlier. Of course, we are getting to the point where manipulation of even video, obviously still photos with Photoshop can be manipulated, and sound, I love manipulating sound. I do it all the time. But so things could be manipulated, but you know, these recordings have been around for so long. It's going to be a big deal. There's this anti-white coalition, anti-white male coalition that they've assembled. They call it the Coalition of the Ascendant, but it's the Coalition of the victims of white male toxic white male masculinity. They build it all around identity politics, but the identities, they just, there's some sort of, there's mutual repulsion, right? And you're seeing it. You're seeing it in, for instance, in London in particular. London, or not London necessarily, but Wolverhampton or Manchester, or these places where there's large Muslim communities. And the British public schools are trying to, indoctrinate the kids with gayness and transgenderism and whatnot. And the Muslims are up in arms. The white British people, they've been beaten down so long that they're going to accept whatever is thrown at them. But the Muslims won't. And so the Muslims are revolting against that. Well, now, who just because somebody's Martin Luther King, does that mean they get to rape? And that's the question. And the power structure would probably like to say yes. But the power structure is no longer in control of these feminists who they created. So, come on, girlfriend, come on, Kirsten Gillibrand, let's go Me Too Martin Luther King. All right. Okay, next topic, Mike Pence. Now, Mike Pence, if I was a betting man, and I'm not, but if I was a betting man, I'd say he may be the last person standing after all of this Me Tooing. He's probably the least likely person to have done some Me Tooing. You never know. There are a lot of hypocrites out there, but he seems to have his bases covered. And he might be president someday, sooner than we think, because Donald Trump, he likely will be, I don't know if it's likely, but he possibly will be impeached in the House of Representatives. The conventional wisdom right now is that he would survive in the Senate based on the Republican majority there. And you would have to have about close to somewhere around 20 Republican senators abandon him and vote against him in order to actually remove him from office. But that's not too hard. That's not too hard. It was probably pretty close to 20 Republican senators who, when Trump originally was Me Too'd with that Access Hollywood tape, weren't there about 20 Republican senators who, like 3 or 4 weeks before the election, said that he should drop out of the race? Okay, so there's no guarantee that if we get to the point where he's been impeached or is about to be impeached in the House of Representatives, that they won't be able to march out, to roll out some sort of new horror about Donald Trump, real or imagined, and get these
20 senators to vote against him and put Pence in. What would President Pence be like? Now, President Pence gave a speech at West Point, I guess it was yesterday, and he was talking. David Duke played the excerpts from that speech on his show this morning. And my goodness, was Mike Pence ever belligerent? It wasn't. He wasn't telling this audience that you might be, when I say audience, the graduates of West Point, a fair number of whom, as Mike pointed out, were black women. And looking at the pictures, some of them are obese black women, which, you know, I'm certain they obviously didn't have to meet the same physical fitness requirements as other West Point graduates. The alarming part of the speech was he was saying, not you may have to go fight in far-flung places, you may have to go fight and die in overseas wars. He was getting and it wasn't just that he was getting specific, but he was specific geographically, talking about North Korea and you know, the Middle East and Russia and all of this. But he was saying, it's almost a certainty that you will have to go and fight and lead troops to their death, fighting wars against it. So he was saying, it's almost a certainty that you're going to be fighting wars. Some of you will fight and die in North Korea, and some of you will fight and die in Iran, and some will fight and die in Russia. It was the most belligerent speech, and you can't imagine a foreign leader talking like that. You cannot imagine Putin talking like that. I mean, the only things that you can imagine, sometimes you hear rhetoric that is alleged by, you know, some Ayatollah in Iran, not necessarily the chief Ayatollah, but and even then, you don't know if they're really saying that or it's just a mistranslation. But hearing in English, I heard the Prime Minister of Malaysia, 93 years old, the good doctor, His Excellency Mahathir bin Mohammed, and what was he saying? He was saying all the different ways Malaysia has used to resolve conflicts, including territorial conflicts with its neighbors, through negotiations, through appealing to international courts, and sometimes they side with us, and sometimes they don't. But they haven't fought any wars. And then talking about China and all the belligerent talk against China from the United States and saying, well, you know, we've been trading with China for 2,000 years and they've never invaded us. But guess what? We started trading with the Europeans in 1506, and by 1509, the Portuguese had conquered us. Well, I don't know. You can say anti-white stuff. But the thing is, he also in the same speech was talking about Iran and why should anybody go to war with Iran, and Israel is the country that's got the nuclear weapons, and but saying why do we have to do all this war? It was not at all belligerent, and it's such a marked contrast to Mike Pence. It was a neocon speech. It was a neocon speech. He is clearly, I guess he's the first almost 2 years of the Trump presidency, Mike Pence was in the background. He was a loyal lieutenant. He was there. He was downplaying when he was always asked about Trump and his temperament and this and that. He was always loyal and downplaying these concerns. Although I've always had a bit of suspicion, because you remember what started out the Russia investigation. Okay, I mean, you had the Russia hoax, you had the accusations of election tampering, election machine hacking, and this and that by the Russians. But one of the major accelerations of the whole Russia investigation, Russia hoax, remember, the first victim was Mike Flynn. Mike Flynn had to resign. Why did he have to resign? Had he done anything illegal or bad? No, he allegedly had lied to Mike Pence. About what? About something illegal? No, just about something very conventional. That President Trump had asked Mike Pence, and this is very common, there's lots of precedent for it, to reach out, to make contact with Russia and tell Russia not to get, not to overreact to the last-minute provocations from the Obama administration, such as kicking out diplomats and seizing property owned by the Russian embassy and threatening a cyber attack on Russia. All these things, and you know, additional economic sanctions on Russia, all these things that lame duck President Obama did. And so the president-elect Trump wanted to reach out to Russia and say, just don't overreact to this, and we'll deal with it when I get into office. Which is exactly what the type of thing Reagan was doing and Nixon was doing and other presidents have done in the past. It's very common. And, of course, Nixon certainly used his national security advisor, Henry Kissinger, for that purpose. I think Reagan was using his CIA director for that purpose, William Casey. And so Flynn, who had been to Russia the year before, was charged with this. And apparently, and this isn't at all unusual, that Trump had said, just do it quietly and don't tell anybody about it. And so Flynn was thrown out of, I mean, he was basically run out of office because he allegedly lied to Mike Pence about it. Mike Pence asked him a question, a kind of general question, and Flynn answered the way, you know, keeping the specifics confidential. The FBI didn't even think he was lying to Pence or lying to them when he told him. So Pence had some sort of involvement in it, whether it was intentional or not, I don't know. But Pence is, I think he's building himself up as the neocon alternative to Donald Trump. And he can remain, right now, he can do that and be the loyal lieutenant because Bolton and Pompeo and Elliot Abrams have gotten, have seized control of the Trump foreign policy. So Pence, by talking this way, isn't betraying Trump. I mean, he's not stabbing Trump in the back because this is the Trump policy now, even though it's not the policy that Trump was elected to pursue. And according to a lot of sources, it's not the policy that Trump himself prefers. But, you know, part of this is because he's been bogged down so much with the Russiagate hoax, which takes up his attention. And, you know, regardless of the constitutional powers that the president has, one thing that the president doesn't have any more of than you or I is time in the day. He doesn't, no matter how many aides he has, assistants he has, powers that are delegated to him by the Constitution, he only has 24 hours in the day. And if those hours are going to be taken up with other things, then that's all the much less time he has to oversee and make sure that the foreign policy he prefers is what the American government's actually pursuing. And I think this has been part of the success of the coup d'etat, is getting the president so distracted with other things that he doesn't have enough time left over to impose his policy preferences on a bureaucracy that is resisting it anyway. And even if he was spending full time on it, does on immigration or on foreign policy, does he have the skills to impose himself? Sometimes people say, oh, all he has to do is issue this order. Well, if he's in charge of, I don't know if it's the largest organization in the world, maybe the Chinese government's larger, but one of the largest bureaucracies, one of the largest organizations in the world. And to impose his will and have all the people underneath him carry it out, that's not the way the world usually works, right? I mean, if you're in charge of a bureaucracy, to get people to do things isn't easy. And typically the only people who are able to do it are dictators. And why are they dictators? They're dictators because they have the particular skill set to impose themselves on other people through fear of death. And, we've had presidents who have been pretty good at imposing their will, pretty good, but they're not necessarily going against the, say, an entrenched bureaucracy. You think of which presidents have been very successful in passing legislation. And, I mean, in my lifetime, the one that really comes to mind is Lyndon Baines Johnson. Legislation that, in retrospect, well, some of it was okay, but in retrospect, a lot of it was really bad. I mean, he got Medicare and Medicaid, and I guess food stamps, but also the Civil Rights Acts and the 1965 Immigration Act. He got a lot of legislation through. He was president for 5 years, and he got more important, not necessarily good, but important legislation through, and things that Kennedy had not been able to get through. He was somebody who was able to, and in his case, it was probably more being able to impose himself on the Congress as opposed to the bureaucracy. But it's not easy, especially when you're going up against forces. Okay, I'll be right back. Thank you.
Welcome back to the show. Okay, so in these closing minutes, and we just have a couple minutes, I said it before, a couple weeks ago, I endorsed Tulsi Gabbard. And who knows? I mean, does she have the ability to impose her will on the bureaucracy? I don't see why she would, right? But it's at this point, it's not even a matter of her getting herself elected president. At this point, what we want is just to have that voice heard for a while in the Democratic debates, because they get a fair amount of attention, and she's saying some important things about what she's calling regime change wars, which is what we call wars for Israel, but it's really the same thing. And then, of course, the new Cold War, meaning the bad relations with Russia. And this is important, and it's a term that was coined by Professor Stephen F. Cohen, who apparently has sent her a donation big enough to, which would be, I guess, what does it have to be, $200 to register with the Federal Election Commission. So he apparently has sent her at least enough to register with the Federal Election Commission, and therefore is being roundly attacked by the anti-Russian Zionist media because Tulsi Gabbard is, she got money from the Putin friend, the Putin ally, Putin apologist, Stephen F. Cohen. I think we want to have her voice, and so I think she's getting into this first round of debates, but the first round of debates, there's 20-something candidates. To get in the next round, she needs to register at 2% in the polls. And she's currently at 1%, and she also has to have like 130,000 unique donors. And at this point, she's got about 75 last time I checked. So she needs some more donations, and the donations can be as small as a dollar. And she needs the support in the polls. Now, if you get called by a polling place, say your name, and if you can send a dollar to the Tulsi2020.com, do it, because even if you don't like her, she is a pretty much a one issue candidate at this point. There's one issue that she's really, really pushing, and that's stopping these crazy wars. Okay, well, with that, I will wrap up the show, but don't worry, I will be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio.